its strategy to exert financial pressure on Baghdad, the United States prevented Iraq from passing a new law to regulate the popular mobilization units, PMU. This obstruction was achieved through political means and the threat of financial sanctions by refusing to pay the salaries of PMU members. In this way, the United States was able to impose its will on the Iraqis quite easily.
Good day to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. During the Middle Ages, the Muslim world had numerous business advantages. They had a huge range of contacts, so they could trade everything from African gold to Chinese porcelain to European amber and furs. And Muslim craft workers were highly skilled, which meant their goods always found a really market. Without Muslim merchants, Europeans would have had no rice, sugar, or coffee. Approximately 5 to 8 million Muslims lived in the United States, and there are over 1,200 mosques. Muslims have been a part of the cultural landscape in America for the past 200 years. The Islamic Empire once stretched into modern-day Europe, particularly in Spain and the Balkans. Today, there are tens of millions of Muslims living in Europe. Now we'll listen to the continuation of our schedule on Iran Radio. We start off this hour's programs with our varied radio productions feature. Then it's time for Insights into the Holy Quran. The program presents a short exegesis or explanation of the ayahs of the Holy Quran. Our radio productions feature will again follow after this. And we round up this hour's programs with Ulama's speech. Stay with us for this hour.
The ancient city of Hafshadon is a good place for archaeology enthusiasts to pay a visit. According to the findings of the excavations that have taken place in some of these old mountains, people have been living in this area for about 9,000 years. And so the city of Hafshadon is considered to be one of the first settlements of the New Stone Age.
The city of Hafshadon, also known as the City of Industrialists, is in the southwest of Iran, 12 kilometers from the city of Shahrekor. Hafshadon is in the second largest valley of the province of Charmahal Bakhtiari at the foot of the beautiful Jahanbin Mountain. According to the locals, the city of Hafshadon has an invaluable heritage left behind from lost civilizations. And to see these historical treasures, we're heading towards the Jahanbin Mountain. Our Hafshadoni friends told us that we had 2 hours worth of hard hiking ahead of us. So we decided to make a quick stop at a nearby spring and fill our bottles with its fresh and cool water before heading out again. No pain, no gain, I suppose. Every single time we felt we'd had enough, the thought of what we were going to see once we arrived kept us moving until we finally reached the Ganelishte inscription. Unfortunately, because of the ever-changing climate, the scorching hot sun and the freezing snow, the symbols are mostly gone. Happy that we got to see an ancient relic before it was totally destroyed, we headed towards our next destination, a place said to be nature's playground, the Shah Mansar Mountain.
On our way up to the Shah Mansar Mountain, we were promised that we'd be able to see some of the most amazing views Hafshadon has to offer. And they were right. Nature is amazing and playful at times. If you look over there, next to each other, you'll be able to see 2 figures. One could be an elephant and one a buffalo. I'm sure that if you use your imagination and look all over this place, you'll be able to find many more.
Let your imagination run wild. That's what we were told. If we had gone further up the mountain, we would have definitely seen more of nature's artistry. But you would have had to have the eye and the heart for it, feel the force around you, so to say. And the last but not least location we'll pay a visit to is the Iskandari Hill in Hafshadon. This is the first and largest national historical site in the province of Charmahal Bakhtiari. Based on the remnants of pottery that were discovered on this site and around it, it is estimated that it dates back to about 9,000 years ago and probably had a structural form similar to a ziggurat. This is the end of our journey, but there is still so much more to be seen. I guess we'll leave the rest to you. This is Gulnar Farnoodi for Iran.
Most objects made from clay touch us so deeply. What's so special about them? Why is a jar, a plate, a pot, or even this little fish made from clay so evocative? Well, for starters, they're made from the essence of life, fire, earth, and water. You see, this is life itself, and I can feel her little heart beating. A ceramic workshop belonging to a friend was probably the best place I could learn more about the art of ceramics. A two-story working studio that throws you into the land of pottery, where all is plates, platters, dishes, bowls, jars, and mugs made from clay. I call them artworks and handmade treasures. Excavations show that the art of pottery dates back to the 7th and 8th millennium BC in Iran. As time went on and techniques improved, this art form reached new heights and masterpieces were created. The masterful brushstrokes of the Iranians on the ceramic works were the true narrators of the people's stories, their culture, customs, way of life, taste, talents, religious beliefs, and of course, their prayers. Azadeh wanted to draw more attention to the art of ceramics, and so she decided to bring various artists together to paint on a ceramic plate. In the exhibition, around 250 artists took part, each displaying their own unique ceramic plate. The event was warmly received by the people. It was very interesting to see how a simple ceramic plate could produce an endless possibility of designs and forms that reflected the emotions of its creator. Each plate was unique and amazing because as you stood there watching the brushstrokes, you could hear it whispering, telling you little secrets of the artist that brought it to life. Let me tell you something interesting. Each artist was given one and only one plate to paint on. Sounds challenging. Well, they all took up the challenge and created their own unique ceramic painting that told their own story. A challenging experience, but at the same time, intriguing. Working with clay, with the elements of life, must surely be enjoyable. And life's all about that. After all, as Omar Khayyam, Iran's prominent poet, puts it, "And strange to tell, among the earthen lot, some could articulate while others not. And suddenly, one more impatient cried, 'Who is the potter, pray, and who the pot?'" Hodalezgi for Iran.
The whole whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, hello and welcome. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at some of the contents of Surah Ankabut. So now let's listen to the 41st verse again.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
مثل الذين اتخذوا من دون الله أولياء كمثل العنكبوت اتخذت بيتا وإن أوهن البيوت لبيت العنكبوت لو كانوا يعلمون.
The example of those who take allies other than Allah is like that of the spider who takes a home. And indeed, the weakest of homes is the home of the spider, if they only knew.
So, brothers and sisters, regarding this 41st verse, previously we mentioned that this whole chapter, this whole surah, has been entitled Ankabut because of the name of Ankabut in this verse. So, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَاءَ كَمَثَلِ الْعَنْكَبُوتِ. The parable of those who take guardians beside Allah is as that of the spider. اتَّخَذَتْ بَيْتًا, that makes for itself a house. We had a closer look on the quality of the materials, on the actually structure of this so-called house of Ankabut. And we had a bit of a comparison between what these houses and nests of the animal actually are. And we understood that why, in comparison with other houses, this is called Awhan al-Buyut, the frailest of all houses in this verse of the Quran. We also said that we are not ignorant of the fact that this house of spider, although it is mentioned as a proverb for this, for the weakness it has, it is one of the wonders of the world. The webs of spider are made from some viscous liquid, which is stored, in some small cavities, as small as the needle point located under its belly. And this liquid, saved and stored in the body of Ankabut and spider, has a very special combination that when it is exposed to the weather, it becomes hard and firm. And this is one of the wonders, one of the great wonders of the world. So, and it actually shows how great the Almighty Allah is. By its particular claws, spider draws that liquid out from these cavities and makes its webs by it. Some commentators have said that the weakness of these webs is because of their extraordinary tenderness, else it is stronger than a steel string with the same thinness. So it is actually surprising that each of these webs sometimes comes out from a very small hole which is under its belly and in its body. And now you may think that how tender, exact, and narrow every one of these secondary webs is produced. So, dear listeners, besides this material that this house has, and which has been mentioned in the structure of the spider's house, its structural shape is also very interesting. We said we're not negating the fact that we can reach the greatness of the Almighty Allah by merely looking at this very frailest of houses, Awhan al-Buyut. But the verse says in the very end, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ, if they know this, which means the ones who are ignorant of this fact, they think that this is the best house, this is the best refuge they might find. But they are ignorant of the fact that they are adhering, they are sticking to the frailest of houses. But at the very same time, we're not negating its beauty. I mean, if you look carefully at the sound houses of spiders, you see an interesting scenery, like a sun with its sunbeams, and it's really interesting. And this house, of course, is a suitable and ideal house for a spider, but on the whole, there cannot be considered a house weaker than this. I mean, the objects that these pagans worshipped, other than Almighty Allah, are like this house. Regarding the fact that the spider is not only of one kind, and some scholars claim that more than 20,000 sorts of spiders have been known until now, and each of them have some specialities, the greatness and power of the Almighty Allah is made in the creation of this small creature as well. I mean, if one were to look closely, he would actually understand how great the Almighty Allah is. But the application of the Quranic word awliya instead of asnam may point to one important fact. The verse says, مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ اتَّخَذُوا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ أَوْلِيَا, the parable of those who take guardians beside Allah as the is as the parable of spiders. So the verse says, these pagans have chosen some people other than the Almighty Allah as their awliya, as their guardians. But it could have said asnam, which means the idols. But why is it? This application might point to this fact that not only the man-made objects of worship, but also the leaders of non-religious groups are in the same row. And the sentence, لَوْ كَانُوا يَعْلَمُونَ, in the very end is also mentioned, and it is about the idols and those false objects of worship, and it is not about the weakness of spider's house, because the weakness of the spider's house is known to all mankind. But the point is that these people did not know what they're sticking to. So the concept of this sentence overall is, if they were aware of the weakness of the objects of worship and the positions that they had chosen other than the Almighty Allah, they would know well that these are like the webs of spider from the point of weakness. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me.
You raise your tired hands toward the sky, and the dark night lights up as you praise God. Your tears rain on your hijab and this cold air is filled with the fragrance of jasmine flower. Come and walk again in our troubled streets and lanes, and heal the scars of our city with your sense of heaven. Oh, far from now. At your door, and you give him your necklace and the only food in your home. You talk to God until the rising of the sun, and you forget yourself while praying.
what if we were able to target cancer cells directly without affecting the healthy tissue surrounding it? Well, that's exactly what the scientists here at the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran have been able to do using yttrium-90. So in this week's episode of Iran Tech with me, your host Ali Reza, we're going to dive deep into how yttrium-90 can be used to target cancer cells in the liver directly without affecting the healthy tissue surrounding it. Stay tuned. Let's clarify something first. When I say liver cancer, I don't mean just the type of cancer that the cancer tumors that originate from within the liver. I also mean other types of cancers that have metastasized, and you can find the metastasized cancer tumors inside the liver as well, which actually makes up the majority of liver cancer cases. And treating liver cancer has been traditionally difficult using surgery and chemotherapy because only about 30% of actual patients qualify to get these treatments. And, you know, speaking of the treatments, chemotherapy itself is unpleasant, and we all know it. You lose body hair, your body is weak. There's plenty of reasons to try to avoid it if you can. And you can using this groundbreaking technology. Microspheres that contain yttrium-90, these tiny glass beads with this radioactive isotope, the radioisotope of yttrium, not the neutral yttrium-89, the radioactive one, yttrium-90. So you can inject these tiny glass beads into the bloodstream, into the blood supply of the cancer tumors, and it can selectively, using selective internal radiation therapy, SIRT, it can target those cancer cells directly and, you know, leave everything else untouched. So this is how yttrium-90 can help treat liver cancer. So first we're going to learn about how it's made, and then we're going to take a closer look at how it works.
Our particle manufacturing process as microspray involves several stages. To create the particle, we first combine the raw materials and form a suspension. We then synthesize them using the Sol-Gel method to achieve the desired chemical composition. After completing the Sol-Gel process, the next step is drying to obtain the target powder. Subsequently, to achieve the intended structural properties, biocompatibility, and a specific characteristic termed PATL, the synthesized powder undergoes heat treatment at a controlled temperature. Following this, the sample is milled, and the insert process, a term used for spheroidization, is performed to shape the particles into spheres. Once spheroidization is complete, the particles are spherical, but exhibit a broad size distribution, ranging from approximately 15 to 20 micrometers. However, the final product requires particles between 10 to 20 micrometers. To achieve this, we perform particle size classification using mechanical sieving, mechanical screening. After sieving, quality control, QC, is conducted under a microscope. The particles are then sterilized, packaged into specialized vials, and sent for irradiation.
These microspheres, these tiny glass beads that contain yttrium-90, they need to be a very specific size, between 20 to 40, 50 microns, so basically thinner than a hair strand. And they need to be exactly that size, or exactly within that range, because if they are too small, then they could essentially seep into other organs of the body. If they are too big, they will just get lodged into the main vessel that is going into the liver. So it needs to be, the size needs to be just right. So once they are injected, they'll essentially lodge themselves around the area where the cancer tumor is getting fed from the blood supply. And they start emitting beta rays that start to shrink the cancer tumor by destroying the DNA of the cancer tumor. And that way, it'll gradually shrink down and get replaced by healthy cells to the point that we can hopefully say that the cancer tumor is essentially gone. And it's compared to the typical external radiation methods, you know, you have to do multiple hospital visits, whereas this is a one-time injection, which is also a lot more precise, hence the selective internal radiation therapy, as IRT. So we're going to take a closer look at how this process works first, and then talk about the broader implications of it.
The patient is first prepared with mild sedation and local anesthesia at the groin. A small incision is made to allow insertion of a catheter into the femoral artery. Using real-time imaging, the catheter is carefully navigated through the arterial network until it reaches the hepatic artery, the main vessel supplying the liver. At this point, a carefully measured suspension of yttrium-90 loaded glass microspheres is injected directly into the hepatic artery. These microspheres, each between 20 and 50 microns in diameter, travel with the bloodstream until they lodge in the tiny arterioles feeding the tumor. Their small size ensures that they preferentially accumulate in the tumor's vascular bed while bypassing much of the healthy tissue. Once the microspheres are in place, they begin to emit beta radiation. This form of radiation penetrates only a few millimeters, targeting the tumor cells while largely sparing the surrounding healthy liver tissue. The beta particles disrupt the DNA within cancer cells, impairing their ability to divide and triggering cell death. This localized radiation gradually shrinks the tumor over several days, as the continuous emission of energy damages the cancer cell's structural integrity. The entire injection process typically takes between 60 to 90 minutes. In the days following the treatment, the microspheres continue to emit radiation, steadily damaging the tumor from within. Throughout this process, the targeted nature of the therapy minimizes systemic side effects typically seen with the traditional chemotherapy or external radiation. By concentrating the therapeutic effects directly at the tumor site, normal liver function is largely preserved, and patients often experience a significant improvement in their quality of life. The precision of this treatment reduces complications and supports a quicker recovery, allowing patients to resume their normal activities sooner. This method represents a significant advance in the treatment of liver cancer, offering a minimally invasive alternative that delivers high doses of radiation directly to the tumor while minimizing exposure to healthy tissues.
It is important to note that the yttrium or Newell glass microspheres injected into patients are biocompatible. The particle size for these microspheres is within the 40 to 50 micron range. Particles smaller than 50 microns risk passing through hepatic capillaries and leaking into the lungs. Particles larger than 50 microns avoid this issue, as they do not migrate from blood vessels into the liver mass. Due to these critical size-dependent effects, strict quality control, QC testing, is performed on the particles to ensure their size falls within the specified range.
The yttrium glass microspheres discussed here are not our primary focus. However, they represent the latest achievement of the radiotherapy equipment research laboratories at the Nuclear Science and Technology Research Institute and are classified as medical devices. This technology serves as a non-surgical alternative for inoperable tumors, either as a standalone treatment or in combination with chemotherapy. A key advantage of this method over conventional radiotherapy is its ability to spare healthy liver tissues, which are highly sensitive to radiation, thereby minimizing adverse side effects. We selected a product with a 100-day time frame to enable faster commercialization and market readiness. Currently, our laboratory focuses on producing internal radiotherapy products, including brachytherapy techniques. These are targeted therapeutic methods capable of localized treatment of tumor tissues. Producing these devices positions us as a regional hub for advancing medical tourism, It is worth noting that our laboratory is the only active facility in the country and the broader region, excluding Russia, specializing in the production of medical radioactive sources. This grants us significant potential in medical tourism. The production of yttrium-90 glass microspheres has already been successfully implemented at the Nuclear Science and Technology Research Institute. The pilot scale production stages are now complete. The animal phase has been completed, and all necessary tests, including toxicity, dimensional, and density tests, which are specific to the production process, have been conducted. The physical parameters of the product align with those of commercial sources, and from our perspective, this phase is fully accomplished. However, to enter the market, it was imperative to conduct the clinical phase to determine the product's efficacy. We are currently carrying out the clinical phase in collaboration with Shahid Beheshti, University of Medical Sciences. Approximately 20 patients have been treated with this product so far. Initial results reported by the treating physicians have been satisfactory, meeting the parameters we prioritize, such as absence of toxicity, no leakage to other organs, and concentration in liver tissue. These outcomes have been observed and documented in several early-stage treatment cases. Indeed, the preliminary results have been declared promising. These results may include reductions in tumor size, tumor necrosis, decreased vascularization, diminished blood supply to the tumor tissue, and I would like to highlight reduced metabolic activity within the tumor area. Fortunately, the outcomes thus far have been encouraging. God willing, upon completing the clinical phase and analyzing the results, we will proceed to secure the required permits from the Ministry of Health, Treatment, and Medical Education to introduce this product to the market and commence its commercial distribution.
We've come to the end of this episode of Iran Sec.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough. Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is right.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. We're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
On the night of Qadr, the angels descend. In a hadith by one of the infallible Shia Imams, we read, use Surah Al-Qadr in discussions with our opponents about imamat. Tell them, is the night of Qadr for 1 year or every year? All Muslims and Shia and Sunni say, there is a night of Qadr every year. Say, very well. So, there is a night of Qadr every year. When it is the night of Qadr, don't then say, now, where is the night of Qadr? When it's night here, it's day in America. When we say night, we mean that period of darkness on earth. In reality, this shadow of darkness on earth collectively forms one long night, which occurs at the specific time for each location. Its totality across the earth is that same night. The question is, when the angels descend, where did they descend during the Prophet's time? Of course, upon the Prophet. Well, after the Prophet, there must be also someone whom the angels go to. Has an angel ever come to you? Has it come to me? The Imam says, say, is the night of decree for 1 year or every year? They say, for every year. Say, so if the night of Qadr is for every year, then every year the angels come. They say, yes. Say, well, where do all the angels go? During the Prophet's time, they descended upon the Prophet. So after the Prophet's time, there must be also someone worthy for the angels to be honored by his presence. And in this way, they proved that there must be an infallible Imam. And now, it is Imam al-Mahdi, peace be upon him, whom the angels reach in the service of the Imam of the age
on the night of Qadr. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Good day to all our listeners. You are tuning to Iran Radio broadcast from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. We start off this hour's programs with Round the World with reporters. Listen to fascinating reports from all over the globe as reporters tell us what is happening in their corner of the world. That will be followed by Minbar. The program covers speeches on various subjects by very well-known Islamic scholars and orators. Our final program this hour will be our radio productions feature. Stay with us for this hour.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian-administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The human cost of the war in Gaza is etched not only in the lives lost, but in thousands living with irreversible physical trauma. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, 6,000 people have undergone amputations since the start of Israel's genocidal war, an explosion of suffering that has reshaped entire families and communities.
Before the war, there were around 1,500 cases, resulting also from Israeli attacks. Now, after the war, the number increased to be over 7,500. This is an indication of their continuous suffering. The prosthetics are not available, and the lack of rehabilitation make the task of this center more challenging.
The ministry reports that children make up one in every four amputees. Their lives are abruptly transformed before they even learn to dream freely. Women account for 12.5%, many having lost limbs while trying to protect their families or flee bombardments.
Every day, we suffer much because we don't have sufficient supportive equipment or prosthetics. Moving from one place to another is a struggle because roads are battered and damaged in the war, and the transportations are difficult.
I used to borrow the walking stick from my neighbor. At first, I got shrapnel from an Israeli attack that caused my amputation. And 1 year after the amputation, I am still getting rehabilitation with difficulty, as the cases are a lot and the center is overwhelmed.
Behind each number is a story of terror survived. Yet survival, doctors warn, is only the beginning. Gaza's shattered health system offers little for those who must now learn to live differently. Rehabilitation centers lie in ruins, prosthetics labs lack the most basic materials, and patients often leave operating rooms to a reality without therapy, mobility aids, or even adequate pain relief.
For Gaza's amputees, the struggle now is not only for survival, but for dignity, mobility, and the ability of rebuilding hope in a place where so much has been reduced to rubble. At Ibrahim for Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
For many people around the world, the first Palestinian Intifada may be a moment of the past, but for the Palestinian people, it remains a movement advocating general, united, and comprehensive resistance to the occupier on their soil despite the constant terror created by the Israeli occupation.
Over the past months, the West Bank has witnessed intensified military raids, home demolitions, siege of cities, and near daily assassinations and arrests. These events echo the same oppression that pushed Palestinians to rise up 37 years ago.
What's happening in Jenin is part of a wider Israeli plot to pressure and weaken the social and political structure of the refugee camp. The destruction and displacement are meant to change the reality on the ground, even if temporarily. But the resilience of the people shows what the community experienced during the first and second intifadas. In the end,